Welcome to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only, and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get a notebook and paper to take notes during the show if you'd like. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. The Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis publishes excess reserves in the banking system on a weekly basis. These are reserves beyond the minimal capital requirements. During normal times, these reserves hover at around $2 billion. Since late September, excess reserves have increased dramatically from week to week. As of November 5th, excesses and reserves stood at $363 billion. This reflects cash provided by the Fed to the banking system. The Fed is literally throwing cash at the banks. The published data shows that the banks are now hoarding the cash. Financial institutions do not lend because they don't trust the health of consumers or that of many businesses. The Fed can provide all the money it wants, but the Fed cannot force any lending. This does remind us of a quote by Ron Paul. He said that what is happening is there's transfer of wealth from the poor and middle class to the wealthy. This comes about because of the monetary system that we have. When you inflate a currency or destroy a currency, the middle class gets wiped out. So the people who get to use the money first, which is created by the Federal Reserve System, benefit. So the money gravitates to the banks and to Wall Street. That's what we're seeing here, and the banks and Wall Street aren't distributing it to the next level of need. And from an article by Bob Willis and Timothy Homan from Bloomberg, the cost of living in the U.S. fell by the most on record, and construction began on the fewest homes ever last month. Evidence the economy is in the worst recession in at least a quarter century. The consumer price index plunged 1% last month, the most since records began in 1947. Commerce Department figures showed housing starts tumbled to an annual rate of 791,000, indicating the industry's contraction may extend into a fourth year. Today's CPI report signals deflation, or a prolonged price slide, may become another hazard facing Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke and President-elect Barack Obama. Deflation could worsen the economic downturn by making debts harder to pay off and countering the impact of Fed interest rate cuts. The economy is really just in horrific shape, said Joseph Lavorgna, chief U.S. economist at Deutsche Bank Securities in New York. Fed officials will take rates as low as they have to avoid a deflationary-type scenario, which now all of a sudden is very possible. Lavorgna predicts the Fed will cut its main rate to 0.5% from its current 1% when it meets on December 16. Fed Vice Chairman Donald Cohn said today that while the risk of deflation is still small, policymakers must be aggressive in fighting the danger. The economy is declining right now and will record a couple of quarters of contraction, he said in answering questions after a speech in Washington. Treasuries advanced and stocks fell. Yields on benchmark 10-year notes fell to 3.44% in New York from 3.52% this week. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index was down 2%. Prices dropped last month as fuel costs plummeted and retailers used discounts for cars and clothing to entice consumers hobbled by job losses and sinking home values. Target Corp is among retailers cutting prices in an effort to lure away cash-strapped holiday shoppers from Walmart Stores, Inc., the discount retailer that last week reported a gain in the third quarter's profit. Excluding food and energy, so-called core prices unexpectedly fell for the first time since 1982. We are moving into an environment where prices are falling across the board, Dave Ressler, chief economist at Numa Securities International Inc., said in New York in an interview with Bloomberg Television. That is going to continue. Deflation is spreading across the economy. Consumer prices were projected to fall 0.8% according to the median forecast of 77 economists in the Bloomberg News Survey. Estimates range from a decline of 1.2% to a gain of 0.4%. Costs excluding food and energy were forecast to rise 0.1%, the survey showed. Prices increased 3.7% in the 12 months to October, the smallest year-over-year gain since October 2007. They were forecast to climb 4% from a year earlier, according to the survey median. A slump in building permits signaling residential construction is likely to keep falling in the next couple of months. Permits dropped 12% to a 708,000 pace, the lowest since at least 1960, the report from Commerce showed. Builders, already mired in a three-year housing slump, are finding it hard to attract buyers as property values drop and banks tighten lending standards. There is also a general decline in purchasing power, which is contributing to the slowdown in consumer spending. Retail sales fell 2.8% last month, the most on record, Commerce Department figures showed last week. Mounting job losses and record foreclosures are causing American consumers, who account for more than two-thirds of the economy, to retrench. Walmart, the world's largest retailer, said yesterday it planned to reduce U.S. prices on Thanksgiving food and Christmas merchandise to lure customers during the holidays. Target, the second largest U.S. discounter, said this week it plans to add grocery items and offer sharper discounts to draw customers who are shunning jewelry, clothing, and home goods, which account for more than 40% of its revenue. Right now, the consumer is very hesitant, Chief Executive Officer Greg Steinhoffel said during the company's November 17th earnings call. They're very stressed. Obama and House Democrats are planning to spend as much as $500 billion to stimulate the world's biggest economy, and UK Prime Minister Gordon Brown pressed other leaders of the group of 20 nations to follow that effort last week. Moving over to the auto industry, GM in Moraine, Ohio assembly once employed about 5,000 people, churning out Chevrolet Trailblazers, GMC Envoy, and even Saab SUVs. However, about 1,000 people will clock out for the last time next month. Thousands more workers for small suppliers in the Dayton area, for whom GM was the only customer, will also suffer. The jobs lost in Dayton due to the GM woes will be something like this. GM Moraine Assembly, 5,000 jobs will be lost. Supplier Jamestown Moraine, 200 jobs will be lost. Supplier Moraine LOC, 170 jobs lost. Super Delphi, 3,000 jobs lost. And supplier CEVA, 170 jobs lost. As we all know, leaders of GM as well as Ford and Chrysler are lobbying Congress for $25 billion in assistance to stave off bankruptcy. Without federal help, they say, the pain of Moraine could be repeated across the country. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Continuing today's show, we're going to now switch to looking at your debt situation particularly, and also the plan to get out of that debt situation. What we've been doing in the past is where we first start with a recap of some of the ideas, thoughts, and important points from last week's show. And as always, I start with an important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and I highly recommend that you go to the library or go to a store and pick up their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. In terms of these shows, which build mostly one week after the other, I also recommend that you go to www.kruufm.com. You can research the archives, life and debt shows, and you can listen to the shows that have been played in the past to give you a basic and broad foundation. What we looked at last week principally was the savings part of your lifetime plan. We've gone through your bare necessities and your wants, how to establish those two parts of the formula for your future savings, and also how using your savings was at the beginning an opportunity to pay off your debt. And that's a very important value here. Really, the hardest part in everything you've done so far was put together this plan and started working on it. You have earmarked 50% for your bare necessities of your net monthly income or your disposable monthly income. That's income minus your taxes, and another 30% for the wants. And then 20% of your paycheck was left over at the end of the month ready to save. That savings originally has been going to paying off your debt, but also now, as you're capable of doing that, that money will become the cornerstone of your lifetime savings plan. Savings is not like the other parts of a balanced plan. For your bare necessities, the balanced money rule is that so long as you cover your necessities, your shelter, your work-oriented car, your food, your health insurance, and keep your expenses under 50%, you can spend the money on whichever bare necessity you want. If you want a nicer place to live and a less nice car, that's okay. Or if you want a really nice car and a smaller apartment, that's okay too. But that's all balanced. You need to have it all work out, food, etc., so it comes in under 50%. And then the 30% were the wants category, which is more open. That's money you can spend on anything that you desire, so long as you stay within the limit. And of course, if you are a family member and in a relationship, you have to combine these items and think of this in terms of the whole household, which we've discussed in detail in the past. But now we're talking about savings, and savings are somewhat different. Because if you put your money in the wrong place, once you have savings, if you invest poorly or you don't put something aside for retirement, you can wind up shortchanging your future. So what we wanted to do is to give you certain guidelines. And it's not okay in this category to just go with the flow and do whatever you want with your savings. As we discussed last week, there are four principal levels of a lifetime savings plan, and that's an important thing to recognize, and you certainly want to write this down. And just as an overview, the lifetime savings plan is starting like this. Stage one, you have to have saved $1,000, and we'll go into more detail about that today. Stage two, you have to pay off the debt that is stealing from your future. We've talked about that a lot in the past, but that's stage two. You're going to use those savings to pay off the debt that steals from your future or from tomorrow. Stage three is to build a six-month security fund. And each one of these stages, as I said, we will talk more about. And then stage four is a lifetime of creating wealth. And stage four has three basic categories or divisions to it, or subaccounts. Stage 4A is save for your retirement. Stage 4B is you pay off your house. And stage 4C is save for your other dreams. Now, it's important to recognize that this is a foundational ascending process here, and the four stages are designed to be taken one at a time. And you can obviously, depending on your net monthly income, your disposable monthly income, and how much debt you have, you may fly through some stages quickly at the beginning and then spend several months in others, and that's okay. And these stages are really designed to help everyone, no matter where you start, so long as you get through them. And stage four, the final stage, is designed to help you build savings for the rest of your working life, so you will be in this stage for a very long time. Now let's go on to the first stage, stage one. We want you to start with a savings plan that has $1,000 in it. This is the first level of the entire plan. Now, you say, well, that's just $1,000. For some of us, that's a lot of money. We're nowhere near it. And for some of us, we already have it. If you already have it, that's great. You have accomplished stage one, and you're ready to go on to stage two. However, if your bank account generally runs towards empty, you do not have $1,000, you want to really concentrate all your energy on getting this first level into place, and it needs a little extra attention. And the way to do that actually is to maybe sell some of the things that you have in your house. And I want to quote directly from Professor Warren. She says, "Hold a garage sale, sell off your CD collection, and put your ski equipment on eBay. Cash in bottles and cans. Offer to work an extra shift, and put every dollar of your 20 for tomorrow toward getting the $1,000 into place. The goal is to put everything you have into jump-starting your savings so you can get some momentum towards some real wealth creation." End quote. You accumulate this money, and where do you put it? You put it in your bare necessities account. And this is a protective layer of money just in case something goes wrong for life's little ups and downs. This is money that you use for the little emergencies, and it will prevent you from turning back to credit card usage whenever anything goes wrong. It's okay to spend this money when you need it, but the caveat is that you have to build it right back up to the $1,000 level the next time you get paid. Now we have this money there in the bare necessities account. It creates a cushion, and that $1,000 is there so you never pay another bounced check fee. There will be no more returned checks or insufficient fund checks for bills that you've paid before your paycheck cleared. You can pay your bills right on time each and every month, and that means no more extra charges from the companies for late fees, whether that's your electric company, Visa, your landlord, or anyone else. So no more late fees. That's a smart way to manage your money. What this does is it creates a buffer zone for you to relax and not have to worry about not enough money being in your account to deal with your bills as you're waiting for your paycheck to clear in your account. And it also gives you the freedom to pay your bills when it's convenient for you, and this is because you are a little ahead. You can be confident that you have created enough cushion to manage if your paycheck is a couple of days late or if the gas bill is a little high, for example. And that's stage one, very important and useful part of the process. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, if you've been following this show right along, we had already discussed trying to maintain $1,000 and moving into stage two is paying off your prior debt, so it's not taking that 20% every month and using it to buy new things. In fact, what you're going to start out doing with it in stage two is to take that 20% and put it towards paying off that debt that has been accumulating, which we discussed in prior shows, that personal debt repayment plan you have already created. And an important thing here is the psychology of it all, to get rid of the worry about savings for other purposes. Don't worry about savings for the future. What you need to worry about is nothing when it comes to debt other than getting the debt paid off. And don't worry how long it will take you to get out of debt. Just take that 20%, as we've discussed in the past, and pay off those debts month to month, one at a time, and then one day you will have gotten rid of all that debt, which is stealing from your future. And once your debt is paid off, you'll have laid the groundwork on which you can start building your lifetime savings plan. And once you have paid off all of your debt, then you are ready to move on to stage three, where you create your security fund. And this is where the heavy-duty savings begins. Just by way of recap, once you reach stage three, the security fund, you have $1,000 cushion in your bank, and you have paid off all of your steal from tomorrow debt. And that is a huge step in your progress. You have no more debt of the kind that we discussed in the past in that category of debt. Moreover, you have balance in your bare necessities and your wants spending is under control. So you are way ahead of almost all the people in this country. The next stage is being put together for savings if something big comes up. If you lose your job, if something big like your furnace or the foundation on your house cracks, so a huge amount of expenditures are there and you need to have a bigger fund, a security fund. Therefore, once stage two is accomplished, you have paid off your debt, it's time to start putting that 20% each month into an ordinary savings account that will grow into your security fund. This is essentially a personal defense fund in case something goes really wrong, and it's nothing more than a simple savings account. Once you start this account, an ordinary savings account, there's no fancy investments involved, no special tax breaks, and your security fund should be easy enough to reach in case you need it, but it should be kept separate from your regular checking account so you won't be tempted to dip into your security fund for regular expenses. It shouldn't be connected up with an ATM card or a debit card for the account because essentially, hands off, except in times when there's an emergency or real need. You set up your account so that you have to make a special trip to the bank to get your hands on the money. Now, why set it up this way? Well, practically speaking, because it reduces the stress in your life to have such an account. If something goes wrong, you get sick, you're losing part of your income, your hours get cut back, you lose your job, something goes wrong majorly with the car or the home. All of this now is going to be addressed by the security fund, so you have a buffer zone there, a protection against a real tragedy. And if such an emergency comes along, then you need to spend the money. You turn to that account and you use it. That's what it's there for. And of course, once the crisis has passed, you need to continue to take your 20% and start rebuilding that account again. This is a cushion that you are creating for everything in your life, and it's really an important backstop for you. Now that you have the principle and the concept down, how much money are we talking about here? Well, the general rule in this program and plan is that your security fund should be able to cover your bare necessities for 6 months. So that's 6 months times whatever your monthly bare necessities amount is. That's what you should build your security fund to. And you build it up just $1 at a time, 1 month at a time, and it will take time to bring it up to that level. If all your debts paid off and you have 20% to put in the security fund each month, to start out, it's going to take you about a year to get to that level of 6 times the bare necessities amount that you have been allocating based on your disposable monthly income. But the important part to remember here is that two things. One, you have that $1,000 for those little emergencies as stage one accomplished. You also have paid off your debt, the debt that would be in stage two, that level of debt, that kind and quality of debt, which is a very large accomplishment. And that now has allowed you to reach stage three and get into making this security fund account. and it's a huge step forward in your financial progress. Frankly, in over a year, presuming nothing from the emergency level of circumstances in life happens to you or your family, in 1 year, you will have moved past what the vast majority of Americans live with. You are in a situation where you are building a financial future, and you will be able to see tremendous accomplishment and a fairly good, hefty bank balance in your name. And the truth here is that you have a very strong foundation upon which you can build your future. And next week, we will take a look at the last stage, stage 4, where we're trying to create a lifetime of wealth. And to do that, it has 3 subcategories to it. So listen again next week, and we will discuss those points. And the final tip for the week is dealing with a new creature called zombie debt. You can get a call from a debt collector about a debt that you don't recall. Companies now buy ancient bad debts for pennies and squeeze you to pay. A decade ago, very few creditors tried to collect on old accounts, figuring it wasn't worth the effort. Now, collecting on old accounts is a rapidly expanding industry. Aggressive companies can buy charged-off credit card accounts from the original lenders for pennies on the dollar or less. Then they use credit scoring and other new technologies to identify which debtors are most likely to pay. The players in this, quote, junk debt or zombie debt market range from fly-by-night outfits to well-established companies funded by Wall Street investors. It's a business that's exploded in recent years as collectors discover gold in old bills. Much of this debt is older than statute of limitations allowed to collect on, or has been discharged in bankruptcy even. The debt is improperly sold, re-aged, and renamed with a different account number and placed on your credit report. So how do you fight back? If you are being contacted about old debt, or debt you don't know anything about, first thing to do is find out about the statute of limitations. If you racked up a debt in another state, you might want to check the statute of limitations there as well. But generally, it's the statute of your current state that applies. If the statute has expired, the collection agency's legal remedies are limited. Second thing is also to know your rights. Credit and debt collections can be an extremely complicated area of the law. Consider arming yourself with a book, such as Leonard's Money Troubles, and if the amounts at stake are considerable or the level of harassment unbearable, consider contacting an attorney. The National Association of Consumer Advocates can provide referrals. The third thing is consider ignoring the call. If the statute of limitations has expired, put the phone down and walk away. There's little to gain and a lot to lose if you keep talking. You could inadvertently extend the statute of limitations or find yourself roped into a repayment agreement that might not be in your best interest. The debt collector is a lot smarter than consumers are, a lot more savvy. They don't have any obligation to tell you your rights. Another point is write to them. If ignoring them isn't working, consider writing a letter demanding the agency stop contacting you. Send it certified mail, return receipt requested. Federal law requires them to comply with your request. Make sure in the letter you specifically say that you are not acknowledging you owe the debt. And another point is negotiate carefully. If the statute of limitations hasn't expired, you may want to negotiate a settlement rather than risk a lawsuit. Again, a lawyer's advice could come in handy here. And keep an eye on your credit report. If a collection agency tries to repost an old debt or lie about the date it went delinquent, you'll need to fight back vigorously. Dispute the entry with the credit bureaus and with the collection agency. If the collector persists in its deception, you can demand that the collector produce a copy of the documentation that created the debt, such as the credit card agreement you originally signed, along with an account history. Chances are, the collector won't have this documentation, and continuing to report the account without providing proof that you owe the money is a violation of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And finally, you can always consult an experienced attorney in the debt collection law to help you with particularly difficult cases. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa.